Welcome to Fabulous After 50, the podcast for women wanting to make the most of their lives. My name is Julie Kennedy, and I am your host. Welcome, everyone. I am so very happy today to be welcoming back the fabulous Nicole Beisler, a creative, charismatic woman who, before becoming an acclaimed transformational expert and meditation and yoga teacher, lived a very different life in the corporate world. Welcome, Nicole. Can you start with a brief outline of who you are, what you do, and why you do it?
Thank you, Julie, for having me. Yeah, I'm always questioning this part, you know, and saying, what do you really want to hear? My job titles? Or do you really want to know me really? So basically, as you already said in the intro, I had 30 plus years in corporate on an executive level. I had a lot of people where I was responsible for. That was my life, happily on the outside, but really sad, lonely on the inside. I somehow lost myself on the way and entered a burnout, a depression, a really deep depression. And then I started over, and that's the new me now. I was coaching inside the companies over years, 10 plus years and more, and I decided to become a full-time coach and helping people to, We just had it briefly before we started the session, to shine their light, to really become the one what they are always being inside. And this is obviously not easy.
And you know from experience, which also helps, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you can read books over books over books.
Yeah.
And you can do courses and whatever.
Yep.
But it won't give you really the experience when you go and walk through and also, you know, face the fear of transition, face the fear of change and what all comes with it.
Exactly. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I think that's very true. So many of us are avid learners, you know, self-development, etc. I've done yesterday, take notes, etc. And they end up on the pile behind me with another 50 courses and books. And it's actually putting what you've learned into practice and daring overcome the fear, I suppose. And so that is what we're going to talk about today. And I was thinking, well, if we say that it is love that makes the world go round, well, what stops it and all the good things which do go with it, I would say is probably fear. So fear, I mean, how do you define fear? So we're going to be talking about fear today and how it can stop us from reaching our goals. I mean, first of all, how would you define fear, Nicole?
Well, I mean, fear is coming around in a lot of different shapes. You know, it can be the most profound one, obviously, is the fear of death. And that's always the major one underlying and building on top of that, different ways of fear. You know, you can have fear or anxiety to go outside of your house. You can have fear of change, as already said. You can have fear of not being good enough.
Yeah, and I think that's a big one, especially for us women, right?
Absolutely. And it's all related, or it's all inside of you. It's building up from very little, all the experience we had. Because look at a little toddler, a baby. Yeah. They don't really have fear.
Right, so we're not actually born with fear then.
We aren't. We are born
through bad experiences that we then, I mean, of course, some fears are good. So let's say a toddler will want to put his hand in the fire because it looks all pretty and orange and dancing and all of that. Right, fine. You burn yourself. And then the fear of that fire is what's going to stop you putting your hand in it a second time. So, okay, for things which might be a danger for our actual, you know, well-being, but it just stops us from so much more, isn't it? Is that societal angst, that fear of looking stupid, that fear of not being good enough? Okay, so how do you go about that? I mean, if we say that fear can stop us from reaching our goals, how does it work?
Well, first of all, it's a body sensation. What you have, or the first thing what you recognize is, it's a biochemical process inside your body. Your breath is quickening, your heart rate increase and all that. And that makes you stop in the process. We all know the saying, fight, flight, or freeze.
Right.
This is the reaction, what you have to fear. And once you are in that state, based on all the experience, what we had in the past, what built it up that, you are not able to decide in a very profound way, what you usually, in a calm way, let's say.
You're not thinking properly, basically, are you?
Exactly. So first of all, you need to understand where this fear is coming from.
Right. And of course, I'm just realizing what I said before about us not being fear is, of course, rubbish, because fear is actually one of our basic instincts. It's indeed that flight freeze programmed into us for evolutionary purposes. But where it might have made sense, let's say, at the beginning of the chain, when we knew to be scared of the giant saber-tooth, which was about to devour us. So we knew that we needed to, divert all the blood from our brain to the heart so that we could run really fast. Nowadays, well, mostly the dangers that we have in society are either, as you were saying, basically self-made, right, based on our own experiences, or are not life-threatening, right? And it is indeed that process, I remember finding that, it diverts the blood away from our brain, so from our thinking ability, to our heart. And I remember, for example, at school, I used to be terrified. Turned out years later that I was actually pretty good at maths. But anyway, I had this one teacher who really made me think that I was, the worst idiot. And we used to be a huge class, 35, 40 kids in school in France. And she would send me to the blackboard regularly. And you had to climb up on this big podium. And I would usually get my foot stuck in my bag and, shuffle around. And I remember I would arrive up there and my brain would be utterly blank.
Blank.
I mean, I wouldn't even know what my name was, how old I was. I was just like changed into some sort of vegetable who would just stand there staring at everybody. And you'd think, well, what on earth goes on? So, okay, so that's what you were saying, right? It's a physical, it's a physiological or chemical, even you said, process. But so how do we then tell ourselves that this isn't a life-threatening situation?
Yeah, really, as said, to understand it, because taking your example, that's a perfect example. I bet once you have to do your tax or doing some math in a different way, everything what has been related or is related to numbers.
Yeah.
You would get in a state where your heart rate is increasing, yeah, or where you say, I'm not really want to do that. We are on autopilot. That's what's happening then. We're just falling back in this experience. This biochemical process starts again. And we kind of ending up in a situation where we are no longer able to really think clearly and be our own. Yeah. So to give you an example from my life, I mean, teachers, they really supposed to know what influence they have on children. I have kind of a similar experience with my English teacher. He told me I better should search for a job where I don't need any English because I'm useless. Well, we're speaking English right now.
Yes. So we have to question it, right? We have to question.
Absolutely. But I didn't, I didn't over a long period of time until I was thrown in a job where I had to speak English. It was just a disaster, when I had to do a presentation. Even if it was in front of my colleagues, my legs were shaking, my voice was cracking. I was kind of, I had a heat, mind blank. And that automatically stops us to reach our goals. Right. Because usually what people tend to do when they get this kind of feeling, they're not going into it. And the beauty is behind the fear. The real life starts behind fear.
That is so true. Because it's somewhere we haven't been yet either, right? So how did you overcome this? How did you then discover that you were good at English?
With the English, I had to speak English okay. And over the time. And that's what I used to say to my clients as well. Do tiny steps and overcome it bit by bit, you know, and seeking new experiences. Because once you have the experience, oh, I can't do it. You stick to that because that's what your mind constantly telling you. You can't.
So you're not making any new ones which would refute what you were thinking before.
Absolutely. So the trick really is to convince your mind to make a new experience.
Yeah.
And learn from that new experience. And this is only working when you go into your inner dialogue.
Right.
So basically saying, well, okay, I got that. You're telling me you can't. Do you have a different solution?
Right. So instead of, I think most of us, as you say, we sort of back it out. So there's like a wall there. We're not going there. We're not talking to the fear. We're pretending it's not there. So it's actually to say, okay, hello, I see you. Thank you. You know, I dare say it's got a positive intention, right? It wants to stop us from burning our fingers. Mm-hmm. And then to actually befriend the fear then.
Yeah, really. To acknowledge that it wants to protect you.
Yes.
But that was in the past.
Right. And what served you then might not be.
Can we do something different? You know, can we just learn to overcome that? And I love to say we all have a past, but it shouldn't define your future.
Oh, that's a nice one. So is it like limiting beliefs as well that you then question, you know, okay, maybe this something happened when you were 7 and you didn't have any criteria of experience and the person who said it to you, you then considered, you know, the royal eminence on all of those matters and you don't question it. And that years later, then you can say to yourself, well, you know, did what he or she say, was it always right? Were there any incidents when I did manage to, you know, speak in English and direct that poor tourist to the museum or whatever, that you can then start questioning those beliefs that you have which are causing the
definitely it's very, very well related in these days, you know, not in the past, because as you already said, in the past it prevented us from death, because there was the saber-tooth tiger, and you know, if we don't run away or play dead or whatever.
Yes, that's not the right moment to say, well, hello, I see you. Say, okay,
But it doesn't serve us anymore right now in the environment we are living now.
So the first step is really basically to recognize it, right? To recognize that we're actually running a pattern that isn't serving us. Because I think most of us, as you say, it's in the subconscious. Most of us are not aware of what we're doing or what we're saying to ourselves. You talked about inner dialogue.
Absolutely. We're going on autopilot. You know, we don't understand what's going on. And I always to give an example out of my life, how this works, how the subconscious mind works. We, with my third husband.
Elizabeth Taylor here. I hope you get lots of engagement.
We used to have some kind of, you know, arguments whatsoever, because I'm very, you know, tiny and perfect and everything has to be clean and so on. And once I came back from a business trip or a stressful day at work, and I'm entering the home and there's that coffee cup on top of the counter table, and you're like freaking out, you know? Yeah. Can't you put that in the dishwasher? Or blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And we constantly had this argument, and I couldn't really point it out why, you know, because my husband was supposed to say, really, come on.
Yeah. Is it not a crime, right?
So it took me a while to understand, and it's going back to really understand yourself, understand the fear.
Yeah.
It was related to a past trauma, or it's still related to past trauma. I grew up in a household where, you know, where it was life-threatening. There was a lot of alcohol involved, and my parents were constantly fighting. And as a little child, you know, you feel threatened.
Right.
Yeah. And I really tried to move away and going out of their way. And then I ended up in my second marriage where it was the same. My ex-husband threatened me to death multiple ways. And it was always when alcohol was involved. So the living room, the kitchen was a mess.
Yeah.
So this mess somehow went into my subconscious mind, into my system, when there's something life-threatening.
Right.
And then you react on an autopilot.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, you won't be because of...
The cup is a symbol for a whole world which is hidden behind there. And maybe also, I was just thinking, maybe just also the desire as a child to tidy up the situation. But since you couldn't resolve the fights with your mum and dad or with then you thought, well, if everything's perfect and everything's tidy, maybe there won't be any. It's really, so that is the first thing. So I dare say when we realize that there's a situation where we're reacting in a way that we know is somehow not right. You know, we do know at our age. I mean, that's the advantage of the 5 years after 50, is that we do know that sometimes some of our, you know, reactions are maybe not the most rational, right? And that it isn't a crime to leave stuff around, so that it's more our problem than something else. And to then dig to what is this? What is making me react that way? And then, as you said, to question it, you know?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And really breathe, you know, before you react.
Right.
Breathe.
Right. Tell us about the breathing then. So why should we breathe?
The breathing itself, I mean, that's also when you have fear, when you have anxiety, you will realize that your breathing quickens. We have that saying, you are out of breath.
Right.
And the breathing is life. So you can... I used to say in my yoga classes, the breathing is like a barometer to show your emotions.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So once it's high, you know, very short breath,
yes,
you know exactly that's not right. Because now while we're talking, we are completely calm. Our breathing is completely normal. So in the moment of fear, of stress, of anxiety, your breathing starts to quicken.
Yeah.
So the first aid is really to concentrate on the breathing. And there's also an exercise I like to show my clients, where really bring your hand on your heart, close your eyes and say, I am safe. And then breathe very deeply. And then say, I am loved, and breathe another time very deeply. And then, and that's my favorite, because that's something my grandma used to say to me, breathe and say, I am perfect the way I am. Because my grandma used to say, you are special. Don't anyone let judge you. You are perfect the way you are.
Yeah, and of course, all of that just does quiet us down. It's always this fear that we should be doing something, that we should be getting better, that we should be learning more, that we should be helping more, that basically it's just the being, isn't it? I mean, so
yes,
much.
If
we want to help other people, I mean, that's something that I've also learned lately, that, you know, I'm the sort of person who does love to help other people and who's, you know, it's literally something that, you know, there's not a should. It's that's what makes me happy. But then it sometimes gets to a point where, you know, you wake up with anxiety about people that you've forgotten you should have rung, or that you haven't, you know, spoken to for a while, and I should be picking up on her, and I should be checking up on this, and I should be doing this and that. And then you get into this sort of anxiety and fear. And it's just the easiest way to help people is to be grounded and happy and in peace with oneself, to be full of light then. And then we can share that light. But frantically rushing around from left to right, trying to solve all the problems of the world, doesn't actually help anyone and depletes us.
Absolutely. And you said something about you know, helping others and going around, we tend to, especially again, it's the experience we had, how we grow up, you know, how yeah. our childhood was. We tend to really want to help people, give solutions and, you know, kind of taking over because we see maybe what the other person can do differently or whatever. But the real art is to wait, breathe, wait until the other person asks you really
so true. For help. That is so true. And that for me is really hitting it on the nail. Not so long ago, I had a thing with my daughter and she was very negative about something. And I was giving her 8 million solutions and reasons why the other person maybe perceived it that way and how she could change it around, etc. And she hung up, which was then her modus operandi. And then she sent me a message back and it was so mature. She sort of said, "You look, mummy, I know, I understand you're a coach and all you want to do is fix something, but sometimes I just want you to be my mum and just listen and say, poor you." And that really struck a chord with me.
Imagine.
Because it also it's a form of arrogance wanting to be fixing everything for everybody. You know, people often don't want it to be fixed. You know, we say that women often moan, you know, with the men around us when we download, you know, and this happened and that happened and this happened and that happened. And, you know, they're not listening to you. They're already making solutions. And at the end, you get annoyed and so say, "Look, you know, I'm just trying to talk to you here." And it's exactly that. They, with the best will in the world, are practical. Whereas we just sometimes just want to download. Once we've said it all, it's done. There we are. Fine. You know, I don't actually
Absolutely.
Know. I just want him to listen and say to me, "Oh, my dear goodness, what a day you've had." Not to interrupt me every half second with, "You could have done this, you could have done that, you could have done this." And it's so true. And I need to taste my own medicine. And I think that is very true. To be there, to listen, to wait, to just create that place of space that they don't feel judged, that they don't feel that they're not doing it well enough. Because that's also a problem, right? When you want to fix stuff, you're almost, in a way, not on purpose, implying that they haven't thought of all these things that you've thought of.
Absolutely. Yeah, you nailed it. Absolutely. Because right. that's how I feel, you know, when someone kind yes. of gives me solutions and I haven't asked for. Yeah. Yes. The first thing I'm questioning myself, like, why didn't I do that? You know, yeah. am I not good enough?
Is yeah. How come she thinks of all these things and I don't? You know, it's actually making yeah. the person have less confidence and trust in their abilities than more. Yeah. It's well meant. I mean, I know it's well meant. And it also robs the other person of the safe space in order to come to their own conclusion and their own solution, which might not be yours.
Absolutely. And the point is, here in that relation, I'm going more now into the spirituality. Our soul wants to make experiences. So we are here to make that experience. Right. And if you or I bringing a solution for that person, which is supposed to make that experience, and we solve it for them,
then they don't have that experience.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I'm always saying, well, it's my life, it's my soul has to do this experience and yours has to do a different one.
Very true, especially when you think of it. I can see that perfectly well, for example, for my children, that years ago I thought if only I could give them the wisdom and the know-how and the confidence that I have now. But there I rapidly thought, well, yeah, but you only get that through experience and you need to fall. You only learn when you fall. You need to learn how to pick yourself up and next time it will be easier. And then more than anything else, you lose the fear that you can't cope, because we're talking about fear here. And I think that the biggest fear of all, isn't it? It's just the fear that we won't be able to cope. And once that fear goes, then we can really be anything. And that doesn't mean that we don't need help, but that we will say, okay, I will manage. Maybe I need extra help. Maybe I need, you know, to buy something, learn something, employ someone, you know, whatever. But it's just the idea that whatever comes our way, we can cope. And I think it is the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of the unpredictability of life. I mean, look at our situation now here in Europe. We've been through, I don't know, our 3 years. Various COVIDs, which none of us could have even imagined in any way 3 years ago. Then suddenly we have war in Europe, you know, all these you know, ideas about Putin and Russia, etc. None of us really imagined that there would be a full-blown, you know, war in Europe with total devastation and all sorts of atrocities. I mean, it makes us scared. You know, we're not controlling what's happening around us. So the only thing we can gain then is the knowledge that we will be able to cope, that we are resourceful. And even looking at, you know, people like in Ukraine who have, you know, discovered huge strengths in themselves, ways of helping other people, etc. That's, I suppose, part of the fear. Now, Nicole, I see we've been through your three tips. I see we've been through the recognizing the fear and accepting it and the focus on the breathing. The third one.
The third one really is, and you kind of crossed it already, is the fear of living in the here and now. So, right. So let it go, you know, be in the here and now. And that's something, especially because you touched the war.
Yeah.
My grandma, she lived through the war with two little boys. My mother was born after the war.
We're talking about Second World War, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're German, right, Nicole?
Yes, yeah. I'm German. And she had to hide from the Nazis. So yeah. It was really difficult for her. And so what she gave me, she never talked about it or not a lot, but she gave me a couple of very good advices. And it's what soaked into me is when you don't know what you don't know, you don't have fear, you know? Mm-hmm. You just go with this flow. You just live one day by another, 1 hour at that time. It was 1 hour by the other. Gosh. And I think that's something also, not only with relate to fear, also related to stress, to overwhelm, to tiredness or whatever, all these kind of negative feelings, you know, it's a projection. Right. It's a projection of the future, what might come.
And we can poison our now with all sorts of things which might never happen.
Exactly. So what you can do in that moment is really to tell yourself, okay, I will do the next hour.
Yeah. Focus on what I can do right now instead of imagining implications in 20 years. You know, I mean, none of us knows, right? None of us knows what's going to turn up tomorrow.
Exactly.
So that is that. So letting go and living in the here and now. And I've said it before on this program. It just struck me so incredibly once. Just read that the simple concept that happiness can only be found in the now. You can remember it from the past. Absolutely. You can wish for it in the future. Yeah. But the only time you can ever be happy is in that little gap. And we need to make that gap because everything's happening so fast here. We can always be working on the fast forward, you know, what needs to be done next. You know, it's like not enjoying a meal because you're already planning the next one. I suppose it's a fear of not being properly organized, or it's a fear of wanting to control things.
You can't plan it, and that's the beauty of the moment. You know, I'm really enjoying talking to you now.
Right.
My mind is here and now. It's not in tomorrow or what kind of bill I have to pay or, you know, whatever is on their mind, because you mentioned the war in Europe at the moment, you know, the prices are increasing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know where it's going. So why should I be worried now? I'm enjoying the moment talking to you.
Yeah.
So make the best out of that moment.
And it is up to us, isn't it? I mean, it's easy. It's like people say, oh, you know, my phone, etc. It's a choice. You can say no. Now is my moment. My moment, and there's nothing, you know, there's nothing so urgent that you need to be, you know, unless, okay, you're a surgeon and you're on duty. But I mean, apart from that, there's nothing that urgent. These are all self-imposed ideas of grandeur or whatsoever. And it's up to us to make that space and to stop. And as you said, to breathe, to enjoy the now. Nicole, thank you very much. This was a lovely talk. And right, so just very rapidly, you are also a coach. Is this something that you also coach clients?
Yeah, definitely. I have a program which is called Master Your Energy.
Okay.
Yeah. And also a retreat coming to that. So really looking into, you know, all understanding where all this anxiety, the fear is coming from, really understand it. And what you just said, taking the choice to think differently.
And you said this is a retreat, Europe?
Yes, there's also a retreat I'm organizing in September this year. Mm-hmm. But there's also a 6-week program what you can go through.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll make sure that all of those details are in the show notes. I thank you profusely, as always, for this beautiful 30 minutes shared together, which I'm sure will be very inspirational for everyone. And I'm already looking forward to next time you come back.
Thank you, Julie. It was so lovely.
Thanks. For the rest of you out there, now you know what to do. Fear and how it stops us reach our goals and what you can do about it. The 3 tips I have taken from here is, first of all, recognize it. Recognize what it's doing to you, how it's holding you back. Question it. Question if that is still relevant today. I loved very much the focus on your breathing. We talked last week with Wolfgang as well. So your focus and your deep breathing so that you oxygenate your brain so that you can think properly and make the right decisions. I loved what she shared from her grandmother, the little mantra with your hand on your heart. I am safe. I am loved. I am perfect the way I am. And the third tip, which is to let go. We can't control everything. We can be organized, but at some point then we let go and we accept that we will know what to do when the time is there, and we live in the here and now, which is where happiness can be found. Take care out there and speak to you again this time next week. Thank you for listening. Now it is up to you to make it happen. Join me next week for another dose of empowering vitamins as we navigate the marvelous roller coaster we call life. Subscribe and let me know what you think we should be talking about. Take care out there.